This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Good morning. September 11, 2010. You listen to AM 970, The Apple. This is a Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. We like to give the tools and tips and try to put you in the right direction if these emergencies or disasters happen to your home or your business or your neighborhoods. For example, you know, like with Katrina, you know, there was just not a couple of homes. Obviously, it was an entire city. But, you know, everybody has their neighborhoods and looking out for thy neighbor, however that American phrase goes. On the show today, our guest is going to be Nicholas Morisi. He's the public information officer of the New Jersey Emergency Management. And we'll get to him later on. Just bring a couple of things up into play that's happened this past week. I had an unfortunate incident I had to go to. There was a fire in one of the cities here in Jersey over the river, looking over the New York City skyline. And it was a perfect case scenario of a fire in a multiple dwelling building, numerous unit owners. I'll tell you one thing quickly is they're great people, very proactive type people. But a case in point is about being prepared, having the toolkits or your proverbial toolbox of things that need to be in place or put into play when emergency strikes or disaster, if you will, in your life. And those old tips that I always talk about is the same staples. It's the medicines and the important phone numbers to have and where you're going to stay and, you know, what are you doing with the pets. Those are the things I like to just be a continual broken record about those things. And, for, you know, financial papers, too. So don't ever forget about those. So, you know, disasters that happen in our country or in our area, you know, no different than what happens in the rest of the world, you know, being prepared in the other rest of the world. But you see these major countries like Pakistan. I'll use Pakistan, for example, with their flooding, completely overwhelmed over there. And I'll tell you this, that, you know, we're affected by it because as a government, we're responsible. I mean, we're all in this party together. And, you know, with the information highway nowadays, mass amounts of military might that we are able to execute. And it also is used with disasters. Pakistan's getting a lot of our Air America, if that's still in existence. But I know there's a lot of dropping of supplies out there. There's, you know, 2/3 of that country is pretty hit pretty hard. I mean, we're providing food for them. Where's that coming from? It's coming from here, coming from the United States. You know, coming from, you know, if you want to really say it, it's our tax dollars. You know, but you can't let other countries just go by the wayside and die in the vine, if you will. It's, you know, like I said, everyone. We're all in this party together. So just because Pakistan is 500,000 miles away doesn't mean it's not going to be affecting us. So just like with Haiti, okay, we had doctors down there. We had the Red Cross down there. It's the same scenario that's happening over in Pakistan. So unfortunately, they like, say, hey, you know, it's 1,000,000 miles away, not affecting me. In a roundabout way, it's going to. So you know, letting these, like I said, countries die in the vine or whatever like that, they don't have a preparedness plan. You know, it's going to affect us. And that's a government, you know, on a whole, they should have a plan. And I know, I think it's more in the forefront with since 9/11 that, Jersey OEMs and the New York State's OEMs, so on and so forth, they got their plans and they're doing their drilling. And like I said, we'll talk to our guests later on about, all those types of scenarios. Get some real important information, plus his website. So regarding this past week and regarding preparedness, so I have this fire, and they said the people in the building, everybody, they're really on top of their game as in being a good neighbor. I've had a similar situation in another city, identical type of fire, and some people were on board, some people were looking at their own agenda. But when you're living in an apartment building, you really can't. I mean, it's part of a community, condo associations like that. You just can't, it can't be about you. It's got to be a collective whole. So anyway, so there wasn't a plan in effect, but, speaking with one of the tenants or unit owners, he's taken this up very proactively, and he and I have been speaking about planning. And I said, well, you know, that's what I talk about on my radio show is being prepared. He and I got to talk at length about this. Real sharp guy, real nice guy. But as I, you know, day one, walking through, people, they're asking, okay, What do I need to get? I need to have this. I need to have that. You know, all those things. All those things are part of the preparedness kit, if you will. You know, having that paperwork available, having those. You know, there's an older woman in the building, and she takes medication. And you know, one of the driving things when I got into her apartment was, you know, cause she got affected pretty badly. She's staying at a hotel. She didn't have her meds. I mean, she had her meds, but, you know, where's my meds? And because, you know, people aren't prepared for, you know, a fire like that or even a flood. So, again, these people are on top of their game. They really step up to the plate, if you will, because most people, again, it's about me and some of my stuff. And they were more concerned about their neighbor. And everybody has pets. And so that brings another anxiety state to it. You know, what am I going to do with the dog, and what am I going to do with the cat? You know, they're positive thinkers, so I think they're gonna have these types of things in play next time. God forbid it ever happens, and lightning strikes twice. I don't think it's going to happen for them. Let me go into a little further detail about that in a second. But if you just join us, this is the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm Chris Plunkett at the AM 970, The Apple, and it is Saturday morning, September 11th, 2010. So their preparedness, again, they had to get rid of some of the dogs. They had to get the hotel room, had to call their insurance company, also some contact information, also telling the boss what happened. Remember, if you've been listening consistently through the last month and a half since this show's inception, those are the things that, you know, those numbers or backup medicines or, you know, do you have a place to board the animal? You know, those are part of your disaster kits or your preparedness kits. With that, the job is moving smoothly. Again, there's a lot of involvement on the human owners, which is really for me, after all these years, it's a pleasant surprise, because a lot of people kind of just go back, oh, I got a job to do, I got to go to work, my boss is on me, so on and so forth. But they've taken the time, because you know what, it is an emergency, it's a disaster. They're displaced, and they're not getting into their place, not tomorrow, not next week. Hopefully I can get them in there sooner than later. But there is also the process of putting everything together and crossing your T's and dotting your I's. One of the things that I forgot to mention was, you know, also the pets, your pets, some of them are on medication, you know. So you should have that backup, and obviously some extra food for them, too. I mean, they like to eat, too, I think. It's a perfect case study on this building for the future. They're thinking, hey, you know, we've had this conversation with the unit owners, and again, some great people there, some really, really nice people. Unfortunately, they had to meet me on this situation, but like I always said, don't meet me professionally, meet me personally. But got some background on them and some interesting backgrounds, and but, you know, proactive, positive people. Because you know what? Nobody got hurt. The pets didn't get hurt, and it's just things. And most of the things are going to be salvageable. I gave them the process of some of the things that we do to retrieve those items that are most important to them, and some of the things that are just your ordinary stuff that is not worth the effort. And, you know, get rid of a pillow. It's no big deal. It's $20. So you have those things in place for the people, and I think they're going to they're going to learn a lot from this. I always learn something new from these jobs. Besides meeting, usually I meet some really nice people and some people that are not that nice. But you know, for me, I'm a lucky guy because I enjoy my job very much so, and I enjoy helping out. It's one of those things that makes the end of the day getting home and passing out, and then coming to and going to do it again. This is Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. You know, I was just talking about the personal side, the people, and which is the most important thing, because everything else can be rebuilt or replaced, basically almost everything else. But, you know, they share common areas and the structure, and it's also a very important piece of the puzzle. Because when a fire like this one happens, I mean, you have to make sure that the building is safe. So, and there's a few holes in the roof. So you come in, we come in, we board that up, and we safe it off from the elements. Generally, with a fire, you like to take a look at all the electric. So you do an emergency safe off on the electric, which we also performed. That took quite a while. You know, get some emergency lighting. You know, inside buildings, you know, you need a fire protection system. So that was compromised during the fire. So again, like we came in, part of the electrical work, put in temporary lighting, put in temporary emergency lighting that attached to the smoke detectors. God forbid it sparked up again. And then you talk about, obviously, what do you do with a fire? How do you put it out? You need water. So there's a lot of water damage included. Rip out anything that's non-salvageable. You know, some of that plaster and drywall and also the carpeting that's in the common areas. All those things are removed to mitigate odor, mitigate further damage that could happen to the structure. And then you install your drying equipment, dehumidifiers and blowers. It doesn't sound romantic, but it gets the job done, I'll tell you that. And then also you want to try to purify the air or mask the air a little bit from that heavy smoke odor. So you have, we use these air scrubbers, air filtration, HEPA filter air filtration devices. It starts getting things a little back to normal, if you will. So, okay, it happened. Now I come in and I tell you, well, here's my plan. Okay, so when I was talking about the personal side, you should also have your plan. You're prepared. Now we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
And we're back. I'm Chris Plunkett, your host of the Disaster Recovery Hour. Talking about plans and disasters. My guest today is Nicholas Marisi, Public Information Officer of the New Jersey Office of Management, or Emergency Management, excuse me. How you doing, Nick?
Thanks, Chris.
So, Nick, we kind of run in similar circles. I mean, you're on a grander scale than I am, but we found out about the newsletter, which is put out in the New Jersey Office of Attorney General's Office, and you're the coordinator to put out this information.
That's correct. The Office of the Attorney General actually houses the Division of State Police, which the Office of Emergency Management does fall under. We're a section within that division and all part of the Homeland Security branch within the state of New Jersey. A couple years ago, we started to develop a newsletter called The Bulletin. And with that said, it is information that we put out there to the public regarding emergency management news, as well as information that they should be doing and following at home. Several other emergency managers in the field follow that as well throughout all of our 21 counties. But the best source that we have, which is updated quicker than any newsletter, is our website. And that's www.ready.nj.gov. And that's really any member of the public or member of, let's say, even the emergency management community's one-stop shop for emergency management news and information.
So now, does that encapsulate all 21 counties? And is it also, we'll talk about New York, but I'm sure there's the standard protocols that all OEMs throughout the country follow. Is that correct?
Yes, there is. It's called National Incident Management System, or NIMS. We're NIMS compliant, our office, but at the same time, our office covers all 21 counties in the state of New Jersey. And those counties, the 21 of those counties, represent 565 different municipalities throughout the state as well. So we're quite busy and quite active. New Jersey, as you know, is a unique state. We're in the middle of New York, a major city, and Philadelphia, another major city, and we have our own infrastructure here that is really second to none, as well as businesses. The Jersey Shore is quite unique, and the hazards that we face are not just man-made, they are also natural as well. The Jersey Shore is no stranger to weather events, although we haven't seen a named hurricane since 1938. There's no reason why we don't plan and prepare each and every year for tropical storms, severe summer storms. Really, Floyd was the last biggie that we saw that came in as a tropical storm, opened up as a flooding event throughout the state. But we plan and prepare 365 days a year to be ready, and at the ready, I should say, to protect life and property for all New Jersey residents as well as visitors.
So, I mean, you said you got the enthusiasm. I mean, I'm a fortunate guy, I always say, because I'm a lucky guy to be in the business that I'm in because I really enjoy it, and it seems similar with yourself. So why don't you give me background on how you developed into this officer of this really, it's a high-profile job.
No problem. I would love to share my experiences with you. And you know what? It's come with a long journey, I should say. I come from a very small family. A small Italian family, and my father was the guy. He'd go out every day, and he worked at the same place for 40 years, Power Company, New Jersey, and they treated him really well. So when I went to college, and I said I'm gonna study communications and public relations, and this is my passion, this is my goal, this is what I want to do. I want to represent an organization, and at the time, when I graduated, I wanted to represent either a Major League Baseball team or someone in the entertainment industry. And like Jerry Seinfeld told George Costanza, they really tend to give those jobs to friends of the team or to those in the know. And I was neither. But I was lucky enough, just starting out of college, to lock on with the Atlantic County Prosecutor's Office as a senior agent and working in the grand jury unit and then also attaching myself to their press office. So being able to do something a little bit different than what I was trained in college and then moving forward. And from that, I just really took my experiences, and that was my first touch of the law enforcement community. And I liked it. I liked serving the public. I liked actually being in the know with respect to making a difference. And that's really where I springboarded that avenue. Following up on my career, I've also taught high school. I've been a director of a high school's communications office, as well as the director of communications for a Chamber of Commerce in Atlantic City. And then my last stop in AC before the job with the state here has been the press secretary for the mayor of Atlantic City. And that was a great experience because, you know, Atlantic City, gotta love it, but at the same time, there are a lot of issues that they do face that are challenging, and it gave me great experience and exposure with the media, as well as a lot of confidence to deliver a message, even if it is a bit challenging. So with that emergency management called, I think everything happens for a reason, and here I am talking to you 3 years into my tenure with emergency management, and it's been a great experience. I enjoy representing the governor. I enjoy representing the public. I enjoy representing the Division of State Police to get the message and the word out there, to most importantly, get a kit, make a plan, and stay informed. And it's something that we drill into the public each and every day that we get a chance, and I thank you for this opportunity. You know, we want to empower each and every resident and visitor to New Jersey to be their own emergency managers, whether they're staying here for the weekend at the Jersey Shore or whether they live here and have lived here like myself for 30 years.
Right. And I had this, you know, mine's not obviously a state that you're in control of, but mine is one house at a time, one business at a time. And yeah, you know what? I like to give them what we always talk about, the proverbial tips and give them the information and say, listen, this is what happens, or this is what should happen after an incident happens. And you're doing it on a larger scale. So besides that, I mean, the pressure must be crazy. The amount of information you're gathering, deciphering, and which is going to be applicable, which is not, that's got to eat up a few hours out of your day each day. So when you finally get these group meetings, and we'll use Jersey as an example, 21 OEM directors, right? I guess one per county. I guess it's always an ex-fire chief or maybe a lieutenant in the police departments or something like that, correct? Is that basically who the officers are?
Yes, and it's a combination of individuals from the law enforcement professions, police, fire, EMS, that have diverse backgrounds, and they're very experienced. And that's one thing that we are lucky here in the state of New Jersey. The Office of Emergency Management has designated three different regions throughout New Jersey. That's Central, South, and North Jersey. And we have representation from the state police to work with those county offices of emergency management, not just in times of disaster, times of crisis, times of emergency, but on a daily basis to work with them on what might be a threat to their community, what plans they need to start to draw up, how their community changes, how we can enhance and upgrade plans, and that's all part of the service that we provide. And it's really a blessing to the state that we have such great emergency managers in all 21 of those counties, that they're a part of the team. There's really not a separation between county and state when it comes to getting the job done and working. Yes, it's two different levels of government, but at the same time, they're all the same team working for the same goal. And that goal, as always, is to protect life and property. So with that said, as much as the information that I push out there and I have to share, we have 21 different county coordinators, I should say, that are willing, able, and at the ready to pass that information on. So that's really a tribute to them and their work and their efforts.
You're listening to Disaster Recovery Hour with Chris Plunkett, and my guest today is Nicholas Morisi. So, Nick, what, the OEMs and the FEMAs, it's a lot more in the forefront of the media after 9/11. But those things were in place before. But how did 9/11 sharpen your tools at the OEMs and the FEMAs? How did you guys, or were they already in place, but you learned lessons? So why don't you tell me a little bit about that?
No problem. The Office of Emergency Management, specifically called the New Jersey Office of Emergency Management, has been in place, since 1979. Prior to that, New Jersey had an Office of Civil Defense. But in 1979, the Office of Emergency Management really opened up the door for a more streamlined emergency management approach. Now, sadly, 9/11 took place in 2001. And with that said, we were up and running. We did respond. We were there, and we coordinated with police and fire from not only New York, but also New Jersey. Anyone that really had the ability to respond that day did. And they came not only from New Jersey, but they came from also neighboring states as well. Everyone wanted to lend help, save lives, and do their part for such a tragic event. Thinking back and looking back after the event, I think the entire emergency management community, not just New Jersey, but New York, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, anyone in the United States, and even overseas, really had to retool their program. It's not so much that it was a broken system. It was so much how to make it better. Mm-hmm. And I think you always want to make yourself better each and every day. Unfortunately, in that case, we, meaning the entire emergency management community across the country, really realized that we're going to have to make it better and better than we ever have. So continuing to do that, the state of New Jersey in 2006 opened up the Regional Operations Intelligence Center. We call that the ROC here in New Jersey.
That's down in Trenton?
Yes, it's in West Trenton, right. Located in the State Police Headquarters Complex. And really what that is, it's our state's fusion center. And we're able to monitor and watch anything that's going on in the state of New Jersey, whether it's a highway traffic accident or it might be a call for, let's say, a suspected package that could be in a library somewhere. We receive all those calls. We monitor. We also do terrorist tips. Any type of homeland security tips are there, and that's coming out of there 24/7. And that's not done and created in a vacuum or just shared with state police personnel or state of New Jersey personnel. We share that not only interagency but also externally with our partners at New York Police Department, Philadelphia Police Department, the Coast Guard, anyone that has a responsibility in our area, let's say our region, and we're in FEMA Region 2, which covers a large area.
Right, right.
With that said, we share that information. And it's just not phone calls. It's active members from other outside agencies, federal agencies, local municipalities working in our building to collaborate and make sure that the most up-to-date and latest and greatest information is being shared and cross-pollinate that information so we can approach it in a collective way.
Right. No, we're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
And we're back. I'm Chris Plunkett, your host of the Disaster Recovery Hour. Talk about plans and disasters. My guest today is Nicholas Morisi. After 9/11, the agencies were talking about disasters and emergencies, but there was the communication. So yeah. Supposedly the communication breakdown of non-interagencies communicating. But this, the way you're describing it, now it's being filtered really properly.
The thing is, I think it took, sadly, once again. Right. A tragic event like that across the country, I think, for police to get together with fire and fire to get together with police and OEM to get together all on the same page. I mean, everybody does their job to the best of the ability. And there's no policeman or fireman that I know that will not respond when the bell rings.
Sure.
But it's pre-planning prior to that to know how to coordinate services. So when you do respond as a collective group, everything's resource allocated in an appropriate way, manner, and fashion. That way you're protecting life and property on an enhanced level, conserving as well as maximizing your potential. And I think that's something that we do very well. There's no question about it that New Jersey is a unique state that has threats from its shoreline to its most northern point. But at the same time, we have the confidence in those first responders at the local level, our neighboring states, whether they be New York or Pennsylvania, to basically work with them prior to any emergency, to have the plans in place to respond as a collective unit. And once you're working in an incident command in response to an event, as you know, Chris, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're a policeman, a fireman, you're all working under that one incident command umbrella, and you're going to approach that to get the job done. And the main goal, once again, is to protect life and property, and in most cases, it's to save life and save property.
Right. I was one of a friend of mine. Dan O'Brien, who's also one of my guests. He's a captain in the volunteer fire department up here in Bergen County. And now, do you also incorporate, you know, contractors and private individuals to assist you with that, in that information gathering, or is it all on a government standpoint?
Sometimes it's a blend of both opportunities. I could tell you, for example, a private entity that we work with very closely is the Operating Engineers Local 825. And we have an urban search and rescue team, which is skilled in swift water rescue, high-rise collapses, urban search and rescue. And now you can get to these buildings, especially in the northern New Jersey corridor, when you're getting closer to New York, where you have a lot of your high-rise buildings. And if something does happen, you're going to have to respond at a moment's notice.
Right. Well, the Hackensack garage collapse, right?
Right, exactly. Or the Tropicana collapse.
Oh, yeah, right, that garage.
In Atlantic City. These are the tools that you need that sometimes go beyond, or the resources, I should say, that you need that go beyond state resource, or let's say even local or county resources or assets. So you're going to have to go out and reach out to the private sector and work with them as an active partner. And Local 825 is just one of those active partners that would work with us in the event of a severe emergency that we need special tools and special equipment to get there at a moment's notice and help us extricate people that might be trapped, or let's say cut down certain areas of the building that might be impeding our progress to saving lives. So there's a lot of things that we do. That's just one entity that we work with.
Right. If you just joined us, this is Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, speaking with Nicholas Morisi. He's the Public Information Office of New Jersey Office of Emergency Management. Nick, now, so you're able to bring in some of the guys, some private contractors. but, you know, your game plan, if you have a New Jersey, then you have a county, and it trickles down all the way down to the municipalities, too. It's just a smaller scale game plan to address, right?
Absolutely. The state overall has what we call an emergency operations plan. That plan has been drafted by the Office of Emergency Management here in the state of New Jersey, which is mainly staffed by civilians as well as state police personnel. We then have different annexes that are addressed in that plan, and those annexes cover anything from mass care sheltering to special needs to communications and warning. There's probably about 15 or 16 annex plans in there that we employ, and we actually incorporate different state departments, such as the Department of Health and Senior Services, Human Services, Department of Transportation, you name it. Any state department that is named, and you can just log on to the state's website on the state homepage and basically see how many state departments we have, they have an active role in helping us plan in efforts for preparation for a disaster. So, and that really is a tribute to the state, because we do have a lot of assets and we do have a lot of resources, but they're no good if we don't have them coordinated. So New Jersey Office of Emergency Management, in addition to working with their counties and the local municipalities that the counties work with, we're also charged with making the overall state plan and incorporating those other state departments to be active members to help protect the public.
So the public, the Harry homeowner, their Joe business owner, he can go on the website and he can see these tips or the preparedness kit that you have on there, because it's simplistic enough for an individual.
It is very easy. And you know what the thing is too, Chris? It takes about 30 minutes to assemble a kit, which is an emergency supply kit that we recommend that everyone has, that will allow you to be self-sustainable for around 72 hours, whether you had to put that kit in your car and evacuate your area or stay in your home and shelter in place. And that kit consists of just non-perishable food items, such as canned goods, toiletry items, toilet paper, waterless soaps, such as the hand sanitizers, of course, battery-operated radio to keep in touch and stay informed with whatever information's coming out, a flashlight, fire extinguisher, first aid kit. Be mindful, of course, of any special needs that your family might have, whether it is a member of your family with a special need or even a senior member of your family, and even infants. Of course, you want to have those things for babies. As a dad myself who has a two-year-old, we make sure that we have enough in the house that if the power goes out or if we have to leave, that we always have a little go kit for the little guy, and he's ready and he's prepared just like we are. So we're going to have to expand that. Like I said, it takes 30 minutes. You probably have all of these things in your home right now. You just have to organize them. And if you don't, it's just as easy as going to the Walmart or the Home Depot or the local store to gather these goods. And more importantly, it's a great time to spend with your family, as well as anyone that you're living with or even your business, to talk about why emergency management is important, how you can empower yourself to be your own emergency manager, and talk about making a plan in addition to that kit with your family. Explain the challenges that your community might face if you live at the Jersey Shore, if you live up the Turnpike, if you would have to evacuate, or the Parkway. You want to talk about that. And once again, talk about that with family. It's wonderful family time spent. Might only take 30 minutes. Could be a great dinner conversation that you have. But at the end of that conversation, you're going to be more informed and be able to save each other's life if something does happen. And that eliminates stress. You know, in the fields that we're in, it's very stressful when an emergency happens to begin with. But as you know, cooler heads prevail. But prepared heads are the cooler heads. And that's the way you want to look at it. So be prepared. You'll mellow out. And then that way it'll alleviate a lot of those stresses that you're already going to have. And you can focus on the more important things rather than searching for where the batteries are in the flashlight, or we need water and the baby doesn't have a way to mix his or her formula. Mm-hmm. So that's what you have to look at.
Right. I mean, and now obviously the listeners, now you know I'm not telling a fib. Be prepared. Even the small things with the waters, as Nick's reiterating here, it is those simplistic things. Like I'm a broken record. It's like, you have to have this, you have to do this, you have to do this. So when this is coming now from the proverbial God's mouth out of our state, Nick's been doing a lot of talking. He's a communication director, so he's got a lot of things to say to be helpful for our New Jersey residents and New York residents and some of the Connecticut people that are able to listen. Nick. Now, last week I had an amateur radio operator on. Now, I don't think it falls into your category, but he's a volunteer, and he's part of some of OEM's protocols or makeup of what they do when they need those guys. Is that similar to something you come across, or is that a communications director's responsibility? How does that play in?
We do from time to time come across individuals that are amateur radio operators, and they are great volunteers. We actually have a few of them in our CERT community, the Community Emergency Response Team, throughout the state. And some of those Community Emergency Response Team members are ham radio or amateur radio operators. And they've done their part during local disasters or emergencies to get the word out and broadcast pertinent information related to that particular emergency. We have worked with them in exercises in the past. Most notably, last year, we did a multi-jurisdictional CERT training exercise from, I believe, seven of the counties here in New Jersey. And while I was there, I actually stumbled across one of the amateur radio operators who was working that event, contributing to the event as well as practicing and helping to enhance his capabilities in the event that an emergency does really happen. He can help. So, yes, they are a great tool. We have a communications bureau here at the State Office of Emergency Management that addresses emergency information and warning. That would be the emergency alert system message. Right. We go out on the airwaves and broadcast that message to direct public action in the event of an emergency. So with that said, we certainly have room for any volunteers that want to lend their expertise as well as learn.
Well, this past week, I'm up here in North Jersey. I'm on a fire. thank God no one got hurt. But the really cool thing about it was the board president of the building. He wants to be proactive. Like I was saying at the beginning of the program, he wants to streamline a game plan of what's going to happen if this ever thing happened again. God forbid it ever does. Lightning strikes twice. It's kind of a rarity, a small percentage. So he's all jacked up. He wants me to give him some information about what he should be doing on a small scale. Obviously, it's just an 8 or 10 unit building. I think it could be applicable if he goes to your website also.
Absolutely. If you log on to our website, which is ready.nj.gov, you could find a way to make a plan if you are a single family homeowner or a high rise building owner or even a resident in one of those buildings. And also coordinate with your local Office of Emergency Management, your police office in your town, your fire department in your town as well, as you make that plan. When I was working in Atlantic City, one of the main concerns obviously was you have all those casinos there. There are plans for those casinos to evacuate individuals that are patrons as well as those who are staying overnight. And then, of course, there's plans to evacuate those high-rise buildings that are within the city of Atlantic City, as there are plans in Newark and anywhere that have high-rise buildings. It's actually incumbent upon the owner and the township to have that done, because there are many, many lives that live there that are dependent upon a plan, and to get them out of harm's way and into safety very quickly.
Right.
And as you know, things happen at a moment's notice, so you have to make sure that those plans are updated, active, sound, and approved.
Yeah, president put out a press release a couple of weeks ago regarding, you know, the month of September, disaster preparedness month. And, you know, and I said to my listeners, I said, you know, when you just can't lean on your government for everything, you know, they're not their parents, you know, they're more of an assistance, and this is my opinion, and give you the tools to execute. So, you know, Harry homeowner or Joe business owner, he should have these things in the back of his pocket so he can execute them when something does happen, and then get it on a larger system would be from the state or the federal.
Absolutely. And, you know, I keep saying it, and I'll say it again. The goal of ours at the New Jersey Office of Emergency Management is to allow each resident, each business owner to empower, we're going to empower you to be your own emergency manager. That's not to say that if something bad happens, we're not going to be there. But at the same time, we're going to be there, but if we can't get there within a certain amount of time, mm-hmm. you have the tools in your toolkit there to help yourself out. There's no question that we're going to respond. That's what we do. And we'll work with other agencies to do so. But at the same time, you hit the nail on the head. You know, government can't address all issues, but at the same time, we can allow you the opportunity. And that's what's so great about this country, is that we, as a nation, give anyone an opportunity to empower themselves to be all that they want to be.
Right.
What we want you to do, we want you to be an emergency manager. And we'll certainly help you and we'll assist, but we can't build the kit for you. We can't make the plan for you in your house, and we cannot evacuate you when you have to be evacuated. But what we can do is tell you how to build a kit, how to make a plan, and how to get out of there if in the event that we can't be there physically at that time.
And now, this is the anniversary of the ninth year since 9/11. I was downtown to help out with the cleanup, and I became some lifelong friends down there. It was really, you know, it's as Americans, we don't give ourselves enough credit. We do band together when things, the proverbial, you know what, hits the fan. For me, there's not, you know, and I'm not a first responder, I'm not part of the heroes. For me, it's not a day that doesn't go by, I don't think about it. Now, for you, and you being really an emergency coordinator, it's got to be constantly in the forefront of your mind.
Well, for a public information perspective, and that's really the particular area that I manage in the office, yes, it is always in my mind. There's not a day that I don't think about it, and I could probably take a poll, or if we had people call in, they could tell us exactly where they were. They could remember it like it was yesterday. I remember it just like it was when my son was born. You know what I mean? It's
right.
One of those kind of events in your life that you'll never forget. And unfortunately, that's one of the ones that you wish never happened. At the time, I was not in the emergency management field or law enforcement field, but as my experiences grew, and especially leading me through the journey of public information and eventually landing here, where I am at the Office of Emergency Management for the state, I don't want it to happen again. I think I'm not the only one that can say that. I think our entire nation doesn't want this ever to happen again. We don't want this ever to happen again. But at the same time, what do we do on a daily basis to ensure that it doesn't? And if it does, how prepared will we be, can we be, and what information can we put out there? Now, that's something that I take very seriously, the information that I could share with the public, because it can save a life and take some type of action to change a life. Unlike yourself, I mean, I don't storm into buildings that are on fire. I don't patrol in a police car. But my words and what I put on paper over the airwaves and how I communicate, how effectively I communicate, can in essence save a life and take someone out of harm's way. And that's what I do, whether I'm writing a news release on a community project that we're working on in South, North, or Central Jersey, whether it's a real event. I take each and every one of those events very seriously and try to communicate to my best efforts while being clear, concise, honest, thorough, and valid on a daily basis to get the information out there. Now, let's pray that we never have another 9/11.
Yes, definitely.
But I trust I'm rest assured that, God forbid, if something else like that did ever happen in this country, in our direct area, that we have the proper awareness, men and women in charge, and especially boots on the ground, to respond to such an event. This country is the greatest country in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless of what you hear each and every day, there's good things that happen, there's bad things that happen, but at the end of the day, we still are a leader in this world, and we're a free country, we're a wonderful country, and a beautiful country, and that's why people are trying to come here over borders, fighting currents, sharks, bullets, you name it. This is the best place to be, no matter what you think.
Well, Nick, let me tell you, it's been a pleasure. And my guest today was Nick Morisi. He's the Public Information Officer for New Jersey Emergency Management. Nick, again, why don't you give those websites out again?
Sure. The website that you need, and this is all you need, it's your one-stop shop. It's www.ready.nj.gov.
A pleasure. This is Chris Plunkett. You've been listening to Disaster Recovery Hour. Nick, thanks a bunch. I really appreciate coming in today. Take care.
Pleasure's all mine. Thank you.
So I want to again thank Nick Morisi for being on and informing us about many things with the NJAlert.gov and readiness.gov, too. But unfortunately, this show is airing today, September 11th, 2010, 9 years after the tragedy downtown. And I was hired a week and change before 9/11 by a company who does disaster recovery work in New York City. And I spent about 5 or 6 months downtown after it happened. It's kind of for me as a civilian working down there and helping my fellow, really, citizens get through their tragedy and try to get their lives back in normal, I took a lot of pride in that. So, taking the train in every day and taking the ferry over and going down there, it was a big impact on my life, and I took things a little differently, and I know a lot of people down there did too. I think across the country we realize what's really important, and that's our fellow citizens or neighbors. On this day, we should have some deep remembrance for the people that passed. Look at what's really important. Things and objects and items, they can be replaced. People can't. For me, I get enjoyment out of my job because I'm helping people get their lives back together. So, then enjoy the rest of the day. This is Chris Plunkett from the Disaster Recovery Hour. If you need to reach out for me, cppems.com is the website, or the email address is cplunkett@cppems.com. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
You've been listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, from CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. You can reach Chris by calling 201-483-8953. And don't forget to tune in every Saturday morning at 7 for the Disaster Recovery Hour, right here on AM 970, The Apple.